We'll call the meeting to order at 8:25. Clerk will note the roll. We do not quite have a quorum yet. We're one member short, but we'll get started with overview and we're kind of going to be members getting toward the end of our overview process, so we kind of have an idea of what these groups do and money they spend and so forth. And we will probably be working on some efficiency and reform initiatives coming up over the next few weeks. I will be have introduced some bills and will be introducing more on some things, and we'll be doing a review of the auction process at some point in time, both auction in and auction out. In other words, reverse auction on products bought and then products sold. We have had a couple members who are interested in going up to Arden Hills to the auction site and kind of how that process works. And I don't know who's been here longest, probably Mark. Have we ever gone, has the committee ever gone up to the auction site in Arden Hills, do you remember? Representative Hilty, your members have any interest in that? Or
I think
it would be something we'd like to do.
Us rural guys love auctions. Vincent and Blaine, I'm sure.
we're salivating over that one. So, Mr. Jordan, maybe we'll see if we can work out a mutual time where we can get the committee. We don't have a very large committee, so hopefully we can find a time. Is someone from admin here? I don't know. They're not part of the group today, but we'll have Mr. Jordan work on something. What we may do is scotch off one of our committee hearings and potentially go from, you know, 9 to 10, 15 or something like that. But we'll talk about it. Maybe we'll do it another time. I don't know. So with that, we will be bringing down the Gambling Control Board. Mr. Barrett is here. Good morning. And we had a legislative auditor's report on the Gambling Control Board. And we have Mr. Nobles back today if we have any questions that members may have had on the auditor's report. But Mr. Barrett, welcome, and if you'd please give your name and title and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Tom Barrett. I'm the director of the Gambling Control Board, and a pleasure to be here early in the morning. I appreciate those members that are here so early. What I thought I would do is maybe take a few minutes, 15, 20 minutes, to do an agency overview of who we are and what we are. And the I did bring along copies of our annual report for those that might not have received them yet. But before I say who we are, maybe it's easier to say what we are not. The Gambling Control Board does not give any oversight to the lottery. We don't do anything with the tribal casinos, horse track, or the card clubs, or do any regulation monitoring of the illegal side of gambling. But we do work very close with our counterparts at the lottery, Department of Public Safety, Racing Commission on those issues.
Excuse me, Mr. Barrett. Representative Solberg has checked in, and so we do have a quorum, and we'll officially call the meeting to order, and go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're good to go. But we do regulate what we call charitable or lawful gambling. A lot of folks associate that with the pull tabs, and pull tabs are by far and away the biggest ingredient when it comes to lawful gambling. There's a seven-member board. Five are appointed by the governor. One's appointed by public safety. One's appointed by the attorney general. The industry that we regulate is the largest in the country at $1.4 billion in gross receipts. We are second to none when it comes to the charitable side of gambling. The five forms of lawful gambling we do regulate. As I said, pull tabs, the biggest, amounting to 93%. We also have tip boards, cattle wheels, bingo, and raffles. Those are the five forms. There's currently over 3,000 sites around Minnesota that are conducting some form of lawful gambling, and we license over 1,500 charitable gambling nonprofit organizations. Now, I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you, but hopefully we can get through and respond to any questions after. But we looked at fiscal year 04, over $130 million was credited in the way of lawful charitable contributions. The biggest recipient of the charitable contributions is government, where roughly $56 million in the way of taxes and fees goes to the state, and then local units of governments can also by local ordinance require charitable organizations to donate to local units of government. But obviously the other benefits coming from charitable gambling proceeds, youth hockey programs, veterans programs, natural resource type programs, a whole series of volunteer fire relief. We're also involved in issuing permits for small gambling activity, exempt and excluded. And for measuring purposes, when we looked at exempt activities, raffles, over $27 million was raised last year alone in just simply exempt activity. How do we regulate? We do that by issuing licenses through education and training. We do monitoring by site inspections, compliance reviews. And if that doesn't get the attention, then we do have the opportunity to issue fines, penalties, and suspensions. But I will take this opportunity, the Gambling Control Board does not like to see a charity fail. We will try to do what we can to make them more cost efficient, but if we find an organization not paying attention to the numbers, then we do take some corrective measures. We have seen an increase in problems and increase in license terminations. A lot of the focus has been on organizations that aren't paying attention to the rising costs and the all-important aspect of volunteers. It's tough to get people to volunteer these days. Those are some of the issues that I think the organizations are facing. The recent report by the legislative auditor was interesting, to say the least. We knew there was a number of issues of concerns when it came to regulation and our limited oversight. The report was critical of the frequency of our reviews and the number of site inspections. It was also critical of the percent of expenditures that the organizations are expending the charitable gambling dollars. The report was complimentary when it comes to game testing, as far as getting to the heart of the integrity of what we do. But there are things that we're working on to improve, and specifically addressing those concerns that were found in the audit. Take the opportunity to say that we totally support what the auditors did. They're very thorough in their review, but they did highlight some critical areas. One, our limited automation when it comes to regulating and monitoring the industry, as well as focusing on the frequency of our site visits and compliance reviews. Both of those things are going to be covered in this year's budget request, and I'll get to that a little later. But we have done some recent changes well ahead of any legislative audit, well ahead of this session. We worked very closely with the industry representatives. We worked closely with the legislators to bring about some changes last year, specifically the changes that we've seen when we went forward with our initiative called rent reform. Well, rent reform is basically sitting down with representatives from the bar industry, representatives of the charitable gambling, to try to find a solution to make those site locations more cost-effective and beneficial to charity, as well as providing fair compensation to the bar owners. Legislation was passed, and within the one-year time of monitoring the impact of those changes, we saw nearly an $8 million increase in charitable contributions going right to the bottom line for worthwhile causes. At the same time, we saw over a $4 million decrease in business expenses. Those two numbers are clear indications that the industry as a whole is hopefully heading in the right direction. Another aspect that we focused on was cash shortages in this $1.4 billion cash business. That's always a good indicator if there's a problem. So we looked at some changes with that, worked with the legislature, implemented some changes, and in 1 year's time we saw a decrease statewide of $250,000 in cash shortages. Another good indication things are heading in the right direction. The industry has changed, and they've also been very supportive. As you know, we used to be under the general fund account, and the way things were happening in the general fund, it was an issue of survival. Since fiscal year 96, we've lost over 30% of our staff. With those kinds of patterns heading down, we approached the industry to say, you know what, we need the industry that we regulate to be mindful of our efforts and what we're doing. And the legislature responded, and the industry is supportive in changing from a general fund to a dedicated fund. They didn't like the fees, but they recognized the importance of our presence in monitoring their operations. So a brief history, if I may, on going back to the budget, where I mentioned that since 96 we've lost 30%. But we have changed. We've gone to dedicated funding. But during that same period, the involvement in the industry did not decrease. It actually went up by over $48 million in terms of gross receipts, gross activity. During the fiscal year, or the 2001 session, we came to the legislature and said, I think we're in trouble. We have dwindling resources for regulatory efforts. Legislature passed a deficiency bill, which was very supportive, only to find the next year the deficiency funding was cut. So that's when we got into 5304 and we began with the dedicated funding, but it was capped at current levels. In other words, we didn't recoup anything we had lost. But our current levels in the dedicated fund do reflect a surplus, and it's a point to that we are going forward with the governor's recommendation to increase our budget slightly to the effect that we would be able to bring back 3 compliance specialists as well as supplement some dollars for our automation efforts. Some of the other issues that could affect the world of lawful gambling, we hear about the smoking ban that could take effect. We hear the Texas Hold'em and some of the other gambling initiatives. Regulatory-wise, we're neutral, but we're mindful that those changes could impact charitable gambling. And so it's one that we'll keep the watchful eye, but there's no official position coming from the Gambling Control Board in that respect. But to our budget, our annual budget is approximately $2.5 million. We have approximately 30 full-time equivalent positions, and yet we look at our investigative type overview, and I always do the comparison that's very familiar with the DNR, but if you knew that you were going to have one game warden for every 1,500 lakes, and you're a fisherman or a fisher person, or an angler, I guess, the chance is that you would, knowing that ratio, maybe not buy a license, or maybe keep that extra walleye. It's the same kind of ratio we have at the Gambling Control Board. We have roughly one investigator for right now. It's about 1,300 sites. That's a concern. We want our presence known. We want to be very visible out there, as well as working with the folks. With the governor's recommendation to increase compliance, that will give us a benefit that we might not have had in the last few years as far as increasing our compliance reviews and the site inspections. I do also have a very simplified one-page picture pie chart showing the budget detail of our operation. But simply put, 82% of our budget goes to salaries and salary-related expenses like workers' comp. The next biggest item, which drops down to 6%, is rent. We have our headquarters in Roseville, and then we also staff 3 regional offices around the state. From there, the expense breakdown is quite small. But I do want to point out...
I don't think we had that in the packets, Mr. Barrett. So if you have extras, if we could get those at some point.
Yeah. Excuse me, because what I think you're looking at is the lottery, and I'd love to talk about the lottery.
We were just paging through. I saw the pie chart, and I'm like, wait, that says lottery, and yeah. I think we don't have that one. If you could have the page... That's great. Thank you.
Yep. Sorry. But back to the budget issues and focusing on the recommendations that came out of the audit request. The change level, as I said, focuses on a number of issues, or the change request focuses on 2 issues, our compliance and our need for increased automation. And this change request supports both those things, both things that were critical in the legislative audit report, but both things that have been presented to the legislature before, only to have it be denied. I was sharing earlier the fact that the last final budget request, we came forward requesting supplemental funding for computers. Governor recommended a $100,000 increase. The House Finance Committee approved it. Senate approved it. We went into conference committee and came out with 0. So that was unfortunate, and we struggled to get by, but this is where we're coming back this session to once again look for ways to help improve our automated efforts that would allow us to go online with licensing and online reporting. So, with that concludes my brief overview. I can certainly talk to some of our initiatives policy-wise if interested. But
I have one question, and then Representative Finstead has a question. Any members that want to get on the list? Representative Hilty, did you want on the list?
Yes.
Okay, I'll put Hilty on the list. Mine was lawful purposes for expenditures. We have a VFW or Legion back in my district. I know they give to the hockey groups. They give to whatever, arts groups. There is one on page 6 of your report. It says programs recognizing military service or humanitarian service. How far does that go in terms of we have National Guard folks, families that are struggling and so forth? Can they use poll tab money to help those families, or is that, you know, is it kind of firewalled off accordingly?
Mr. Chair, in reference to that specific lawful purpose code, currently the use of gambling proceeds for that purpose was focused almost entirely on veterans. They've served their time. Money is used for honor guard type services, Memorial Day activities, those things. Included in our legislative initiative this year is an allowance where charitable organizations can donate to a program that supports families and active military personnel in need. You know, if they had some situation involving their family or whatever. So that's one of the new initiatives, and we expect it'll be passed. But to that point, right now it's primarily focused on veterans, but there is an allowance that if it passes this year that would extend the use of charitable gambling proceeds for active military personnel.
Okay. Representative Finstead?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think you said this, but I didn't catch it quick. How many employees, how many FTs does the Gambling Control Board have?
Yep, Mr. Chairman, Representative Finstead, currently we have approximately 30 full-time equivalent. We have a couple of part-time investigators, but full-time there's 30.
Okay.
Regulating the $1.4 billion industry.
Okay, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Second quick question. I see you have $160,000 for rent. Is that per year?
Mr. Chair, Representative Finstead, yes, correct.
And then I guess my next question is, where are you located? Where is that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Finstead, we have a headquarters in Roseville, and then we have three regional offices in Hibbing, Fergus Falls, and St. Peter.
Okay.
Mr. Baird, that includes the rent for all the facilities in Gross, then?
Correct.
Okay. Representative Finstead?
Then last question, thank you, Mr. Chair. Going into the charitable gaming... Oh, the legislative audit that talks about the 43% exceeded the business expense limits. So when we talk about the exceeding the limits, what is, for one, what are you doing to crack down on that? Two, what's the dollar amount as far as revenue that the charitable organizations are missing out on, state is missing out on, Gambling Control Board, so on and so forth, if you could answer that.
Mr. Barrett?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Finstead, I'll try my best. It requires a little bit of history. The way organizations were evaluated in terms of their expense calculations, it was during their whole life of being licensed as a charitable organization under our rules. In other words, if they started back in 85, we were monitoring all the way through since 85. And so they might have made increased donations back in 85, 90. Now we're seeing periods where, if monitored on an annual basis, they're exceeding those expense calculations, but they still might have the credit built up in the account, so to speak. So they've always maintained the expense calculations while they're licensed. If they went over, they were required to reimburse the overspending from non-gambling funds. But the point of the audit was to take all these organizations and evaluate them on an annual basis, take a picture in just 12-month block to see where they were, and that's what you're seeing in the report. And frankly, it's an issue we've raised as well in terms of we've seen increased license terminations where organizations are not meeting their expense calculations and they're forced out.
All right, Mr. Chair, one last follow-up to that then. So I run a VFW Main Street Sleep Guy in Minnesota. I have pull tabs for the local youth baseball program. How often do I expect to get audited currently under how you're operating the control board?
Mr. Chair, Representative Finstead, currently it's roughly every 2.7, according to the audit report. But that's obviously a focus on, again, pointing to the decrease where we lost 30%. I'd love to see us out there every year. I think the organizations would like to see us. We might be looked upon as the bad guys, but I think we come in and we give some guidance and assistance to keeping them on the right path and doing the right thing with their reporting. It would help.
Representative Hilty and then Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Barrett, I may have been distracted and missed this if you've already addressed the question, but what legislative initiatives are you proposing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, we have basically six initiatives that we're working on. The biggest one right now is an initiative involving what I would call bingo reform. We saw the success of what happened when we got into rent reform and working with the bar industry and the like. We see huge expenses coming out of the conduct of bingo. And, again, trying to work with the industry to find ways to minimize those expenses. That's one of our initiatives. Another initiative, some technical housekeeping that we tend to see every year. We're also focusing another initiative on the issues related to the audit report, whether it's trying to reel in the definitions of lawful purpose, what folks can spend their money on. The best example, and it's one that's found in the audit report, is that organizations can spend their money recognizing humanitarian services. But what does humanitarian services mean in the true sense? So we're trying to clarify a number of those definitions to help organizations keep it as what it was intended for. The other issue is focusing purely on some of the recommendations coming out of the legislative audit report, the expense calculations. We'll be proposing a new method of monitoring, evaluating to make sure these organizations can stay within a reasonable expense calculation. I know it's very sensitive because it's going to be an abrupt change depending on which way we go. But an important one nonetheless in terms of trying to reel in, as you say, some of the expenses or the organizations have been overspending. So there's a number of issues that we'll be presenting. We're trying to keep it in one bill so we can present it all at once. But I do look to this bill as far as two important points. One, allowing latitude to the charitable organizations to run their charitable gambling, be a little more creative, but within reason, within the restraints. But then also be a little more restrictive for regulatory purposes of how they're spending their money or how they're, for both lawful purpose as well as charitable or as business expense. Thank you.
Representative Pepin?
Yes, I have two questions. I think you mentioned to Representative Finstead that you had 30 full-time equivalent staff. And if my math is right, that works out to a little bit more than $68,000 per person. And that seems like a pretty high income. And I was wondering if you could maybe just clarify a little bit, are they professional staff or why the high income? And then another question that also piggybacks on something Representative Finstead asked earlier was the 43% of organizations that exceeded the business expense limit. I wasn't clear what, maybe you mentioned, I just wasn't paying attention, but what are the penalties that they get, or have you gone after them to claim that money, or what? Where are you at with that process?
Ms. Barrett?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, to the point on the salaries, of the 30, we have a number of professional staff. Of the compliance staff, we have 16, basically they're auditor-type positions in our licensing. They're similar classification but doing different things when it comes to that. The investigators, professional. We have a receptionist, an assistant to administration, and that's about it in terms of clerical. There's, I guess, three clerical positions. So weighted in terms of professional, there's more professional staff on our side. Since I started back in whatever it was, 2001, there's been no pay increase for me as director. I've received the same pay as when I started. But when you factor in the 18% for the salary fringe benefits, then the true net drops down quite a bit. But if that's what the numbers show, it's. But including that is also the allowance for workers' comp. Okay. To the point on the what do we do with organizations that overspend? There's a couple of avenues. Depending on how bad they overspend, we can take corrective actions, whether it's penalties, suspensions, or terminations. When organizations are overspending and it's at a rate that they can't recover, what we find is they terminate their own license. They file, say, we got to get out because we can't make it. If they elect to stay in the business, the law requires them to reimburse any expense that exceeds what was allowed in terms of the lawful purpose expense calculation. They need to reimburse that from non-gambling funds.
Mr. Barrett, I see on the pie chart you have $100,000 in legal services. Is that actually attorney general cost, or is it counsel in-house, or is it counsel contracted, or what is that?
Mr. Chairman, the legal services represented there is two-part. One, We pay a fee now that we're in dedicated funding, and we're paying at the rate of $80,000 to the Office of the Attorney General for legal counsel for the benefit of the board members as well as cases. The remaining $20,000 is allocated for administrative type hearing costs when an organization might appeal a board decision and they take it to the next level, which would be the administrative Office of Administrative Hearings.
So, Mr. Barrett, are you getting $80,000 worth of billing, or are they just charging that to you in case you might need the Attorney General from time to time?
Mr. Chair, when we changed to dedicated funding, we sat down with the accountants of the Office of the Attorney General, and we looked at what we were billing or receiving in the way of services the previous year. So it was established as this is maintaining the same level of legal services, but it's billed on a quarterly basis. Now, to the point that we revisit that next year, but we had committed to saying we would probably expect the same amount of legal services. We have our monthly board meetings. We have monthly compliance review group meetings. Both those instances, the attorney is there and representing, as well as all the case reviews that we do with the Attorney General as far as case preparation and any legal challenges that go through the Office of Administrative Hearings.
Okay, Representative Blaine and then Representative Kahn. Representative Blaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir, you had mentioned that it may be 2.7 years that the organization could expect to be audited, and I understand your comments about low staffing numbers within your department there. I'm not as probably as familiar with the gambling industry or the nonprofit charitable gambling industry as maybe others here, but I'm concerned if you could just explain to me how organizations do their reporting or how they would know where they're at as far as their expenses. Do they file a yearly report or a quarterly report that would help them know where they're at, or is this done monthly?
Mr. Chair, Representative Blaine, it's done both. One, they're required to report monthly to the Department of Revenue reflecting all their gross sales activity, prize payouts for the month. That's due by the 20th of each month. We work close with the Department of Revenue as far as monitoring those reports. At the end of their year, they're also required to have an annual audit done independently of the organization. And there's the benefits of an independent annual audit to show the financial condition of the organization. Now, unfortunately, when these independent audits are done, sometimes it's just simply debits equal credits, and there's no evaluation in terms of the overspending, if you will. That's done by both Department of Revenue as well as the referrals of the Gambling Control Board based on how they report to the state. So there is some monitoring done based on the agency, the organization. But again, as pointed out in the legislative audit report, that's an area that was recommended that we increase our review and monitoring. Target those problem area organizations that are overspending. It's not like we haven't looked at them. We just, according to the report, haven't done a good enough job to monitor the those organizations.
So really, typically it may run over 2.5 years before that's addressed then with an organization by your organization. A charitable gambling organization could be running in excess for a couple of years before it's addressed by the Gambling Control Board?
Mr. Chair, Representative Blaine, not necessarily, because the law requires them on an annual basis that if they've overspent in their expense calculations, they are required to reimburse from non-gambling funds. Now, to the point that they don't do that, we don't monitor, they run a greater risk of being severely penalized for exceeding those. But normally, these organizations, and with the assistance of revenue, will identify those organizations that are negative. And as a condition of license renewal, if we see that they're negative, they won't be issued another license or license renewal until they've paid back the money that they've exceeded in their expense calculation.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Boyd.
My point then being, in the process of the work that you do, sir, then if an organization, charitable gambling organization in XYZ town in Minnesota, is in excess on their spending at the end of the year, does that, in that report that comes to your department, then does that get red flagged or brought up so that you know who these organizations are, have a list of these organizations at the end of whatever the fiscal year is, or if it's the calendar year, or whatever, however that's done, so that this is addressed then, or has the ability to be addressed by your organization?
Mr. Chair, Representative Blaine, it is red flagged, and there is contact with the organization simply because if they don't take care of their negative expense, we would not issue a license renewal. But to the point that we are taking corrective measures to stop that negative expense is, I think, the focus of where we're going to look at to say, you exceeded your expense this year, what are you going to do so it doesn't happen again next year? And that's where I think we need to increase the efforts in that respect. We do monitor, we do the red flag when it comes up, otherwise we wouldn't be able to issue a license. But to the point when an organization is overspending, we're going to get more involved as far as why are they overspending, and maybe they need to change their operation, or maybe they need to get some more folks involved in monitoring.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Representative Kahn.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, couple of questions. On page 4 of the budget, there are some percentages. Looking in the second paragraph on that page, said Minnesota ranks number 1 in gross receipts from charitable gambling. When compared to regulatory budgets of the same group, Minnesota ranks 7th. One statistic that you don't give is the proportion that Minnesota donates to transfers to charitable organizations. I remembered at one point I heard that Minnesota ranked last in the country in terms of the proportion of its proceeds that goes to charitable organizations. Is that number true or not true, or why isn't that number listed when you're giving us statistics?
Mr. Barrett, if you can answer that, otherwise Mr. Wilson's here and he might be able to help out with that too.
Well, I'll try it, Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn. I'm not sure about that. I don't think Minnesota's last. I think in comparison, because I know the audit report was critical of basically 4 cents of the dollar going to charitable, and yet there is a discount of any value of the taxes or the local contributions that went to government. So if you were to include that, because that is lawful purpose currently under law, so it's up to roughly 10 cents on the dollar. But I think if it was a percentage based on gross receipts and not just simply because we're the biggest, that's something I think we can look at. As far as the hardest thing is to get comparable data with other states, because there's different regulation and the like.
Well,
but it's something I think, yeah, we can certainly.
Well, I remember being shocked at that ranking, so I would like to know what it is now, and you know, with that, with all the caveats about whether it's accurate or not. Then the other thing, I know one change in law that I helped do was that the requirement that your dispersals on behalf of youth athletics be equitable in terms of gender. How does that come, and how do you check up on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, and again, because that is a one that we monitor. Every month, organizations file their list of contributions. We ask them to specifically identify the youth activities. And there's the allowance in law that if somebody thinks they're being slighted based on gender, they could file a complaint with the board. And I'm happy to report once again another year has passed where nobody's filed a complaint saying that there's been a gender inequity.
How well is that publicized?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kyle, we, as part of the training that all new gambling managers go through, as well as the refresher, we make sure that they're aware of it. When we see these expenditure reports come in with the organizations, it's called the A code, if it's missing, we ask them to go back through and make sure that it's correct.
Actually, I guess I'm not sure if it's your job to do this, but I was sort of interested in how well it's publicized among youth athletic groups that are primarily serving girls, that they know that they can do this and they can make an application. Do you know of any attempts that have been made to publicize that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tanner, we produce a bi-monthly newsletter that goes, again, primarily to the gambling managers of the organizations, but certainly because we do routine updates and new things, and it might be a good friendly reminder that if you feel that your youth activity is being shortchanged, so to speak, to you have a right to file a complaint, so we could follow up with that as well.
Okay, thank you.
And I also look to the charitable industry to follow that as well.
We are going to bring Mr. Wilson down after Representative DeLaForest's question, and also, members, we have just the synopsis of the Legislative Auditor's Report on the Gambling Control Board, which did have some major findings of interest, and I believe that the Gaming Committee did have a hearing on this, but if members are interested in having a more thorough discussion of this, we can back up some time later for further discussion on this. Mr. Nobles is here this morning. If we have some particular questions on the auditor's report, this is in your packet. But what we'll do is we'll go to Representative DeLaForest, and Mr. Wilson would like to come down and just give some brief comments for Allied Charities. Representative DeLaForest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Barrett, I just had a question. I know churches are engaged in lawful gambling. Do they pay taxes as well? Are they subject to the same type of treatment as other organizations like the American Legion in terms of tax treatment and oversight by your agency?
Mr. Barrett.
Mr. Chairman, Representative DeLaForest, if they're a fully licensed organization, yes, they would be taxed like any other organization. The reason I throw caution is we also issue exempt permits, a lot to churches and the like. When we issue an exempt permit, that activity is tax exempt. Because it's small, relatively small and minimal reporting.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. That was my follow-up. Does the state track how much revenue, I don't want to use the word lost, I'm loath to use that, but you know, the revenue from exempt licenses, do you track that so you know how much that is?
Mr. Barrett.
Mr. Chair, Representative DeLaForest, yes. And for the value of last fiscal year for exempt activity, this is activity where prize value ranged from $1,500 to $50,000. The value of gross sales from that activity was $27
million. Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems that since we've had so many churches complain that government isn't spending enough money, perhaps that's something to think about. Thank you, Mr. Barrett.
Mr. Barrett, we had this thing in the media recently about this Texas Hold'em tournament giving away hats and T-shirts and somewhere in Stearns County. Big surprise there. Did your office have any involvement in that? Was that particularly local law enforcement that came with guns drawn while these guys were sitting around playing cards, or was that totally local law enforcement?
Mr. Chair, thanks for this opportunity, because I know there's been, when that first came out, the report was the Gambling Control Board. The Gambling Control Board, again, doesn't oversee any of that kind of activity. We just simply monitor the five lawful forms. But as I pointed out, we work very close with our counterparts, in this case, Department of Public Safety, where they do monitor illegal-type gambling activity. But I believe, and Mr. Ball is here, they worked in concert with local law enforcement officials in that area in this particular raid. I wasn't there, so I don't know what the guns were drawn. I know it was a scene. But to the point where I did have an opportunity to tag along with some of his undercover investigators at another site. They're sponsoring a casino night. And there's this area of, is it lawful or is it illegal? And so we always look for those three ingredients to be present in order. And I don't mean to preach, but it's a good opportunity, I think, for everybody to understand them. When the three ingredients are present, then it's considered gambling. In other words, consideration. Does it cost somebody some money? Is the any skill involved? If there's no skill involved, it's a random selection, luck of the draw, so to speak. That's the second ingredient. And third, is there a prize?
Just a quick question. If a college were to have some type of sponsored casino night where they played blackjack or 21 or whatever, and they gave away T-shirts and hats and things for prizes, would that be considered illegal gambling?
Well, Mr. Chair, and it's good to engage in some discussion. I might not be the most appropriate person, so I'd stop there. But using that example, did it cost the students anything to enter this activity? $5 entry fee.
Sponsored by student activity fees, let's just pretend.
Well, I mean, if it cost them somebody and then maybe a portion of their student activity fees
sure.
went towards it,
right.
then we would probably say there is consideration there. Is there skill involved? And this is where some of the gray area comes in with Texas Hold'em, and I know it's very popular on TV, but is the critics would say there's no skill, or the proponents would say there is skill. You know, the skill might be in the bluff as opposed to the random flop of the cards. So that's kind of the biggest gray area I think we have right now as far as determining if it's legal or illegal. But is there a prize? You know, as nominal as the T-shirt is, there is a prize there. So other things that the organizations look at, is it organized and systematic? Is somebody making money? Are they advertising, promoting it? You know, those are other ingredients. So I might need to stop here because I'm outside my league a little bit and who should be monitoring. But I would offer that when we see this activity as it relates to charitable gambling, there could be an impact on the charitable gambling when those activities are going on, because if they're playing that, they might not be playing the charitable. And I saw that firsthand at the site that was doing a casino night, where they're all sitting at the table having a great time and a lot of play money laid out, but nobody's going to the pull tab booth. That would be the concern as it relates to our industry and the like. So,
okay, Mr. Wilson just wanted to come down. He's with Allied Charities. If you give your name and position for us, and we're going to try to get the lottery up by 9:15, members. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is King Wilson. I'm the executive director of Allied Charities in Minnesota. That's the trade association that represents the organizations that conduct lawful gambling in the state. As Mr. Barrett acknowledged earlier, there's roughly 1,450 of those around the state. Approximately 960 of them are dues-paying member of Allied Charities. The first comment I'd like to make is, you know, charitable gambling in Minnesota is a big business. As Tom alluded, we are number one in the nation as far as the business, the $1.4 billion that charitable gambling does. We are number one in the nation as far as taxes that these nonprofit tax-exempt organizations pay. Number one, nonprofit tax-exempt organizations in this state pay more taxes than any other state in the country. Last year it was roughly $56 million. Throw in the fees that we now have, it's close to $60 million in taxes and fees that these nonprofit tax-exempt organizations pay. In Tom's defense, we're also at the bottom of the barrel as far as the regulatory budget for what they have to do to regulate our industry. Allied Charities believes we need strong regulation. A couple years ago, we held our nose as we had to pay additional fees. We are a little bit alarmed that what happened during that year was that about $2.5 million was budgeted to the Gambling Control Board for their staffing to do what they need to do, and currently roughly $3 to $3.2 million is being collected from organizations. We're delighted that the governor's budget increased his budget to recommendation to use some of that additional money that's being collected. We think that they should have that because we firmly believe, as the regulated industry, we want them out more than every 2.7 years. If they could get down to two or less, that would be beneficial. Having them, and not that we agree with them all the time, but having them there. What I wanted to speak about was a question that Representative Finstead came up with, talking a little bit about the expenses. And since the legislative auditor's report has come out, and again, by and large, I think about 85 to 90% of what was in there relating to charitable gambling was good, positive things. It's resulted in some changes that the board is doing, actions that the board is doing. But the particular section dealing with the allowable expenses, and it's in the summary where it says fiscal year 2003 tax data showed that measured on an annual basis, 592 organizations, 43% exceeded the business expense limits established in statute. We are having very great difficulty with that because we believe that's not true. The statute says that an organization may spend no more than 60% of the gross profit from other forms of lawful gambling may be expended for allowable expense. At nowhere, at any point in time, has it ever said that this is on an annual basis. So when you take this 12-month snapshot, these folks are not breaking the law. They're not doing anything that they aren't allowed to do by law or rule. Where it raises the question for us is maybe during this period they've exceeded that 55%. the question that has not yet been answered to me is it excessive? I think it maybe points out perhaps that maybe organizations cannot operate at 55%. And one of the things we've seen in our industry, while we're at $1.4 to $1.5 billion, we've been really steady for a number of years, and I don't know all your background, but if you've been involved in business, if you don't grow your business, you know, you have problems. So when you stay the same, unfortunately, every year compensation goes up a little, health care goes up a lot, other things go up. So, you know, we're very troubled by this expense deal. One of the things that's also that's really troubling when looking at a 12-month snapshot is we have some weird accounting rules that we have to do for expenses. Unlike other businesses in the state of Minnesota, we can't depreciate our capital assets. So if some of these organizations out of this group had opened up, were a new organization, an existing organization that went into a new site, and you put in a pull tab booth, could cost $4,000 or $5,000 for a nice pull tab booth. You might put a cash register in, $700-$800. You might put a drop safe in, $700-$800. All the costs involved with that. We pay for that within 30 days, and we do not get the opportunity to depreciate that like any other business is. So, you know, you could have, if you've done some things like that, it really distorts it. I think it points out there maybe are some questions and problems. We're in the process of working with the board on the expense calculation area. Maybe what's been allowed where you've been able to do the profit carry, your expense calculation carryover from day one of your business, maybe needs to be revisited. We're willing to do that. We actually had some discussions yesterday, and I think they're going to continue that. But the statement that all these organizations are, you know, have exceeded what's established in statute, we believe, just is not true. And my theory is, and again, we haven't been able to look at this list of 592, is I think many of these, if not most, are organizations that are in smaller sites as far as volume. Doesn't matter if you're a big organization or small. If you've got 10 small sites, you're going to have more expenses than perhaps somebody with the same volume. And, you know, we think it would be tragic to do this on an annual basis because we're not sure you're going to be able to cut expenses back much below this level. And if we're going to drop from 1,440 organizations and lose 592, which would probably include several from every one of your districts, that would be a real problem for this industry. We'd like to find a solution that makes sense and looks at it a little better, but it's just not true that these folks have exceeded what's established in statute, because I think they've met the statute. A few of them have to reimburse their things there, but the statement just was not totally factual.
Okay. We have a couple questions. We're going to try to wrap up the next couple minutes. Representative Finstead and then Blaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Being a dumb farm kid from Godal, I'm just going to ask you this. I go into that same VFW in Sleepy Eye, I throw a dollar down for a pull tab. What percentage of that dollar across the board for your organization, so just general terms, what percentage of that dollar actually goes to a charitable contribution, a charitable organization? I think Representative Kahn had talked about it, but I just want to get it clear in my head. Out of that dollar.
The most recent numbers I have in front of me are based on calendar 93, and I think they're numbers that have been very similar over the years. For net profit, the lawful purpose expenditure category, it would be roughly 8.9%. About 4% of that is taxes to the state of Minnesota, and about 5% of that would be to the fire department, the city's school, whomever it might be. Part of that reason is 9% is Minnesota. One of the reasons we are number one in the country as far as sales is because our prize payback is roughly 82%. Again, that's been fairly consistent over a number of years. And in the past, people said, well, just lower your prize percent and you'll have more money for the bottom line. You know, we've had $126 million for taxes and charitable contributions. It is my belief if you lowered it to 65%, 70%, 75%, we might be able to build up a higher percentage at the bottom line, but I don't think we would have $126 million. Gambling is very driven by the prize payback. Minnesotans like to do charitable gambling because we have one of the highest, if not the highest, prize payback in the country.
Mr. Wilson, did you say 1993 or 2003?
I'm sorry. I think I said 1993, and I meant to say 2003.
Oh,
it's a big difference.
Oh, that's okay.
All right, just thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to make this crystal clear then. I throw in a dollar and Sleepy Eye VFW, 5 cents out of that dollar will go to the sports baseball team. Correct?
Okay.
Yes.
2.5 cents will go to the sports softball team.
Sure. We have actually, Representative Kahn, we have actually a lot of girls in Sleepy Eye that are playing baseball.
Yes, that's right. My granddaughter's playing baseball in Oregon, too.
Yep. Thank you.
We got to keep moving. Representative Blaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try and be brief. Sir, you had mentioned that with what's written in statute now that, or because of what's written in statute or not written in statute now that you don't feel that the report that was given to us by the state auditor is actually accurate, and when Mr. Barrett testified, he had said that, and I had asked him this about the reporting procedure for the organizations out there, that they report on a monthly basis, and then unless I misunderstood him, on a yearly basis too. There seems to be a kind of a lack of consistency in the understanding of what is really required as far as reporting. Am I reading this right, or am I misunderstanding you, sir?
Mr. Wilson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Blaine, what the summary says is that 592 exceeded the business expense limits established in statute. I think that is not correct. I believe what Mr. Barrett described, the way the system works, with there are further rules that are very technical, talking about the reporting mechanism that Mr. Barrett described. That is what charities do. I believe that what he described complies with what the law and the rule is. I just think that this statement was misleading in that, what is in statute does not, I mean, the statute doesn't say anything about annuals, so for them to say that these organizations exceeded the business expense limits established in statute, I believe it's very misleading here. Mr. Barrett, I believe, was very accurate in the way he described the way the system works, that I believe complies with the law and rule as we know it today, as is written today.
One for the
quick follow-up.
Would you say then that, I mean, because of the discussion we're having here now, leads me to believe that maybe we need to revisit what's in statute right now so that we have something in the books that's clear and clarified. Would you agree with me on that, if there is a misinterpretation either by your group or Mr. Barrett's group or the state auditor, so that we can get everybody on the same page so we're kind of singing the same song?
Mr. Chair, Representative Blaine, the Gambling Control Board yesterday initiated their legislative proposals for this upcoming session. There is some language that will attempt to clarify it. We believe they went a little bit too far, but we'll be working with them and with you so that it will be clear for everybody involved.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, members, we do have this gambling oversight and regulation auditor's report. I think the Racing Commission hopefully can come in next week, and then we may have Mr. Barrett and Mr. Nobles come in, and we may get into a little more depth and try to get that all one hearing so Mr. Wilson knows, too. I really think it's worth us taking a look at this for just more than a minute or two. So, thank you, Mr. Wilson. Mr. Barrett, thank you for coming in as well. Next, we have the state lottery. This is always an interesting one because we get into environmental trust fund and some of those items. Mr. Harris, good morning. From the great freedom-loving state of South Dakota, I know that you were hired out of there, and we appreciate having your expertise brought across the border.
Thank you.
Yeah, something's going the other way.
You know, you can drive 65, you can have a loaded shotgun in your back window. I just, sometimes I just marvel at the freedoms that they have across our West. But, Mr. Harris, good morning and welcome.
I hope I'm not blocking it too much. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Clint Harris. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota State Lottery. And I'd like to walk through all these slides with me. So, in April, the Minnesota State Lottery will celebrate 15 years of raising money for the state of Minnesota. Over $5 billion in lottery tickets has been sold. Over $1.2 billion has been returned to the state. Over $3.1 billion has been awarded in prizes. Minnesota retailers have earned over $315 million. So today I'd like to touch on some of the major points of the lottery operations. We sell scratch-off and online lottery tickets. This is not an easy job. We sell in a highly competitive and rapidly changing marketplace. My predecessor, Mike Vekich, described the lottery as a business in a government wrapping. Competition is more than just other gaming. It's every other impulse item sold at the store. We have a complete. We have to compete for shelf space and visibility. No retailer has to sell lottery tickets, and no customer has to buy one. We offer two basic types of games, scratch and online. Last year, we introduced 41 new scratch games. Each retailer will have between 6 and 20 games on sale at any one time. Different players have different preferences for game themes, play styles, top prizes, and prices, and they like new games. Online games have a longer shelf life. Tickets are generated by a computer terminal at the retailer that is connected to a central system. Powerball is the best known online game, but not the only one, as you can see from the chart. Both types of games have security that is extensive and impressive, as documented by the legislative auditor.
Mr. Harris, Powerball is a shared with other state game, right? And the other ones are Minnesota only?
Powerball and Hot Lotto are both multi-state lottery games managed by the Multi-State Lottery Association, involve other states. Fiscal year 04 was the third best sales year ever after fiscal year 00 and 99. Sales are difficult to project, though, depending on things like gas prices, the state of the economy. A better economy means greater sales, of course, and the random nature of jackpots. However, halfway through fiscal year 05, we are on a pace to beat our previous sales record. We project even higher sales for fiscal year 06 and 07. Sales projections for the coming biennium may not reflect those in your budget documents. They will be reflected, however, in the March budget forecast.
Mr. Harris, is the governor's budget based upon these numbers right now? I know it's just really difficult to predict, but what is the estimate going in and then coming back out for general fund? Because it's so difficult to predict. Are these the estimates that he uses, or could we say, he said we're going to, you said we're going to get more money so we can spend more money in our division because you said so.
Yeah, we'll get to that in the presentation here a little bit if you can wait.
We'll be excited for that one.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Fiscal year 04, however, was a record year for the money the lottery provided the state. We project that we will beat that record in fiscal year 05. And again in each year of the biennium. Mr. Chairman, when we met a few weeks ago, you asked, as you did now, if there was any way we could find some more money. We've since reviewed our budget and our sales forecast, and I'm pleased to report that the upcoming budget forecast will show a $7.7 million increase in revenue returned to the state from the lottery. We are also expecting to return $2.3 million more in fiscal year 05 than originally forecast. These increases result from both higher than expected sales and reductions in expenditures. Here's how the lottery dollar is divided. The single biggest item is prizes. Without adequate prizes, no one would play. Finding the level that maximizes revenues to the state is a challenge. Last year, as you can see, operating costs were 6% of revenue. Retailers earned about 6 cents on every dollar they sell. The lottery contributes to state programs in several ways. Net proceeds are what a business would call profits. The Constitution guarantees that 40% of the proceeds will go to the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund through the year 2024. The rest now goes to the general fund, though that is at the discretion of the legislature. Players have a year to claim prizes. Any that are not claimed after that time go to the general fund. In fiscal year 04, that amounted to $7 million. You will notice a change item in the budget relating to unclaimed prizes. This corrects a technical error that occurred when the legislature last changed the distribution in fiscal year 03 of unclaimed prizes. It will result in one-time revenues of $1.3 million to the general fund and $875,000 to the Environmental Natural Resources Trust Fund. there is a 6.5% in lieu of sales tax on lottery tickets. Disposition of this is up to the legislature. It is currently split between the Game and Fish Fund, the General Fund, and the Natural Resources Fund, which goes for state, metro, and local parks and trails in the state's three zoos. Each biennium, the legislature makes an appropriation from the Lottery Prize Fund to finance the Department of Human Services' compulsive gambling program. This appropriation was $3.8 million for the current biennium. It is one of the best-funded programs in the country. The lottery is the sole source for funding this program. Every prize winner over 600 is checked for debt owed to the state, including back taxes and child support. The lottery has collected over $2 million this way over the last 15 years. Prizes are subject to federal and state income taxes. In fiscal year 04 alone, more than $5 million was withheld from Minnesota state income tax.
Mr. Harris, what is the cutoff? I mean, obviously, if you win $3, we're not taxing that. But what at what point do you guys start saying, okay, you have to come in and collect your prize, and we're docking you at 28%?
The IRS rule requires an entity to report income above 600, and then above 5,000, you are required to withhold federal income tax. And I believe that follows the same process for the state of Minnesota. So any prize over 5,000 is taxes are withheld. State income taxes are withheld.
Very good. Thank you. Representative LaForest actually has a related question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Harris, you're not saying that there's any sort of de minimis rule, are you? Is it not true that any gambling winnings are income and must be reported? What you're referring to is when your agency must report to the IRS the winnings. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator LaForest, that's correct.
Promote me.
Oh,
that
yeah,
is correct.
This is a House committee, sorry.
Senator.
Representative.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Harris, right now we're really monitoring people who are at the 5,000 prize level or the 600 prize level?
600, we are required to report that they earned that income to the IRS.
Okay.
600 and higher.
Okay.
It's volunteer beyond that, below that.
Okay.
The lottery was authorized by voters in the 1988 election. It is operated by a director appointed by the governor with the advice and consent of the Senate. The lottery is self-supporting. We do not receive an appropriation from the general fund. This year, for the first time, the governor must recommend and the legislature must approve a cap on the amount that can be spent on lottery operations. The governance task force was established. A governance task force was established in legislation last year. It is made up of gubernatorial appointees and members of the legislature. They have issued their report earlier this fall, which will be heard in Representative Westerberg's division this afternoon. You can read it on the lottery's website, or we can provide you a copy if you'd like. Before proceeding to the budget details, I'd like to touch briefly on the events of 2004. For the staff, it was a time of tremendous change, at times very emotional, demanding, traumatic, and rewarding. It began with the death of the longtime lottery director, an appointment of Mike Bekich as acting director, and the release of a critical legislative audit. The audit contained 49 recommendations. By the end of May, the lottery had addressed all 49. I won't go into detail on the recommendations here, but we have a report available if you're interested. Marketing procedures were reviewed by a Blue Ribbon Committee of outside marketing experts. The staff created its first ever strategic and marketing plans. A permanent director was hired in October. Throughout, public confidence remained high, as shown by high sales and record profits. Our survey showed that the public's opinion of lottery management's security and integrity was not adversely affected by the year's events. Employment has declined, as you can see by this. Employment has declined due to attrition and two rounds of layoff in fiscal year 04. Regional offices in Eagan and Brainerd were closed in June of 2004. Cuts in operating expenses have come from staff costs, advertising, promotion, office space reductions, and I'm pleased to report that we just negotiated a new contract for the production of scratch tickets that will save about $1 million over the biennium. We will continue to invest when it will lead to increased revenues. For example, new scratch ticket dispensers, vending machines, and other such devices. Here you see a history of operating expenses along with our projections for the next biennium. Operating expenses does not include prizes, retailer commissions, or the cost of producing and distributing tickets. These, of course, vary with the level of sales. The red items, as you can see, there are actual numbers, and the items in blue are budgeted numbers.
Mr. Harris, on the permanent employees, you said it's 144, so that's the current number of employees, so that's 25% down from...
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
144 minus 25%.
You can see our employment history here, and as you indicated, we're actually down. If you look back to
the next one, okay.
If you look back to 1996, and you compare that to FY05 FTE, we are actually down 32% during that period. In fact, fiscal year 04, which was the transition year, ended the year at 144 positions, and that course carries into the next biennium. Mr. Chairman, you asked for information on our lease space last time we met. As you can see, we've reduced our space by 27% in the last year, and our costs have gone down by more than 30%. We closed off, as mentioned, we closed offices in Brainerd and Eagan, renegotiated lease rates in our Marshall and Owatonna regional offices, subleased space in our Detroit Lakes office to another state agency, and reconfigured our Roseville headquarters to accommodate the remaining Eagan staff and are subleasing 4,000 square feet to our online vendor.
Representative Solberg.
Chairman Schiff, when you posed the Brainerd office, where did that responsibility to service that area shift?
Mr. Harris?
Go ahead and take it. I'll let
introduce yourself for the tape.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Don Feeney. I'm the Research and Planning Director of the Minnesota State Lottery. Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, the field staff who reported to the Brainerd office were reassigned either to the Virginia office or to the Twin Cities, the Detroit Lakes office, or the Twin Cities metro area office.
So, three.
That's correct.
Representative Solberg.
Well, Mr. Chair, how did someone that was assigned to the Twin Cities office service Greater Minnesota?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, the staff in question are the ones who service the St. Cloud area, and I think our feeling at the time was that it was probably easier for them. It's not so much that they work out of the Twin Cities; they work out of their homes, their vans. They visit the retailers in that area once every 2 weeks. They report to a meeting with their counterparts and their manager. That's the only time we see them in the Roseville office.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As operating expenses items, as with most agencies, our biggest expense is personnel costs, which represents 41% of our operating budget. By law, we can spend no more than 2.75% of revenue on advertising. Our budgeted figure is considerably below this level, approximately 1.5%. The other category includes such things as information systems, repairs and maintenance, and travel. Purchased services include such things as auditing, security, drawing, show expenses, and research. The total corresponds to the governor's recommendation for the operating expense cap. Lottery revenues. This slide shows our projected revenues for the coming biennium. As I mentioned, this is an increase of $7.4 million over the November forecast, including a $4.4 million increase in contributions to the general fund. General fund is the single greatest beneficiary. So the total contributions for the biennium will be about $120 million. The Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund will receive about $56 million. Game Fish Fund, about $20 million for the biennium. The Natural Resources Fund, $20 million. Under current law, 45% of this money goes for state parks and trails, 45% for metro area parks and trails, 6% for local trails, and 4% for the state's three zoos.
How much was for the zoos?
4% of that $20
million. Okay. And that's what, Como, the state zoo, and Duluth?
Yeah.
I didn't know that they had an automatic line item in the lottery budget, I guess, for the zoos. But interesting.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that comes through the Environment and Natural Resources Committee and their portion of the budget. It's not a line item in our budget.
Okay. It just floats over. Is that an OSTOF issue? Okay. Okay, Willard Munger. Okay, any questions from members? We really appreciate the information that you had for us here. I have to leave. I got Representative De La Forest on the list. I for one really appreciate a lot of the work that was done. I know Mr. Vekich did a lot of heavy lifting on layoffs, and it's not easy to have 25% less staff and so forth. But I for one, when I was a member of GovOps, aggressively stated several years ago that we had way too much overhead in the lottery, and I think that you've done a good job of cleaning that up. Representative De La Forest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Harris, one thing I noticed that is missing from your presentation that we see from a lot of other state agencies is a mission statement. As you see it, what is the mission of the Minnesota State Lottery?
Mr. Harris?
Mr. Chairman, Representative De La Forest.
Dig it out for us. I'm not big on mission statements. I'll be very honest with you that on this side of the aisle over to this, I'm not sure what you guys think, but I just think you guys have better things to do than sit around and do mission statements.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this isn't kind of a check the black thing where I'm looking to check the black. I'm curious, okay, let's not use mission statement. What's your philosophy then of the state lottery? I mean, what are you supposed to be doing?
Our responsibility is to raise revenues for good causes in a manner that is fair and safe and secure, that represents the ideals of Minnesota. We don't pander. We don't promise winnings. We don't promise that you should buy lottery tickets to improve your financial picture rather than the stock market. Of course, that's probably the same thing sometimes. We advertise in a professional and appropriate manner. Our philosophy is primarily that, to raise revenues in a responsible, ethical, and efficient manner for good causes in Minnesota.
I have one question because I have to leave. I'm sorry to interrupt, and then I'm going to turn the gavel over. Mr. Harris, if a person's, I have this, you know, tobacco public assistance bill. If a person's on public assistance and you have one of these little debit cards, can you buy lottery tickets with your MFEP money? You know?
Right now, I believe that in law or in rule, it uses the word cash, and it defines cash as cash, checks. We are actually looking at apparently there's a difference between a credit card and a debit card, and in some we are looking to see if a debit card could be described as one of the definitions of cash. Right now we do not use the word debit card in our rules, but we're looking into that, and if it is, we may include that as a not a requirement for retailers. It's up to the retailer to have their own policy about what a person could use to buy lottery tickets, but we sort of give them the frame for it.
Okay, thank you. I may look into that a little more in depth as you guys try to figure out the definition of that. So I have to run to another meeting. Representative Pepin can take questions from the group here.
I still got a couple here.
Representative De La Forest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Harris, just for a moment, I want to turn to the gambling program that you mentioned, I think, was funded to the tune of $3.8 million. It's unique and fascinating in the sense I think there are jurisdictions within Minnesota, for example, that do not regulate alcohol sales. They provide liquor directly to the populace in much the same way the lottery provides a product directly to the populace. What is sort of the philosophy or public policy behind what appears to me to be fairly unique in the state recognizing the issue and saying, okay, we're gonna help fund or solve a problem that we're creating.
I'm not here long enough to understand the history of how that how the lottery. I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Mr. Harris.
Representative De La Forest. I wasn't around at the time that was all created. I may turn this over to my colleague here, but I had the same position in South Dakota, and in South Dakota, the lottery was the only, like Minnesota, the only agency that provided funds to the Department of Human Services for gambling treatment. I guess it's, I'm probably speaking because I'm the director of Minnesota now, so I'm speaking about my philosophy in Minnesota, but it carries forward from South Dakota, that we recognize that some people get in trouble playing lottery products, playing casinos, and we recognize that and feel that it's appropriate to provide some support to help those people, those that can't help themselves. And we think the Department of Human Services is the appropriate entity to administer those kinds of programs.
Representative De La Forest, do you have another quick follow-up?
Perhaps a comment. I'd be happy to hear from Representative Kahn, sort of our institutional repository of knowledge here, and I mean that sincerely. But I tell you what I'm struggling with here is not only with the lottery, but also with these ideas. We've all had the lobbyists come and visit our offices recently and tell us about the grandiose schemes for expanded gaming options, and many of them administered, Mr. Harris, by your agency. And I'm curious because it seems to me, and my thought process was sparked by this gambling program, that here we have the state admitting that it's providing a product to its citizens that is harmful to some of them, admittedly, not all of them, but it does harm some citizens and some rather severely. And how does that square with the state's fundamental mission in our constitutional scheme, that they're there to protect the health, safety, welfare, and some would say morals and instead of welfare of the people? So How the heck do we square that? And perhaps that's not a question, but it certainly is something that I admit that I find rather curious, how the heck we square those two things. And maybe Representative Kahn has a comment or at least some institutional knowledge to share with us.
Yeah, Representative Kahn, I know you had a question too, so why don't you handle both?
Madam Chairman, actually I just wanted to make a comment. One of the things, there have been some studies. We have had reports from some of the people that study the problems of compulsive gambling. And one of the things that's interesting is that the least of all of the kinds of gambling that exists in the state, the least amenable to causing problems of compulsive gambling is the lottery. It's not pull tabs. Just go into a bar where pull tabs are being used a lot, and you can just see this kind of cross addiction, drinking, smoking, and pulling pull tabs all at once, along with people. cross addictive and so then anyway we're about to get rid of that, so that'll be okay. But then the and the casinos are also, when you look at the funny embezzlement cases that you'll often get, you know, a woman who's been the manager of some small company and suddenly there's an embezzlement case, and what was she doing? It was to go to casinos and that kind of thing. But the only group that we've ever collected money from for this purpose is the lottery. And it's what I call the Willie Sutton theory of state budgeting, which is that you go, when Willie Sutton was asked why he robbed banks, he said that's because that's where the money is. Well, that's why we went to the lottery, to pay for something that they don't cause, because it was a source of money that we could easily tap, and no one ever objected to do that. I've always, my kind of one-liner on gambling, on most gambling things, is that I call it the regressive tax on stupidity. And one of the things that I once did in one of the expansion bills, and I don't know if we'll see an expansion bill coming through here, is to put an extra tax to go to the Department of Education to institute, instead of just going to Human Services to look at compulsive gambling, to send programs to the Department of Education to counter the problem of innumeracy, which is the mathematical equivalent of illiteracy, so that you then teach people that they shouldn't be throwing money away, that the house always wins. And so there isn't a... There, better mathematicians, they'd understand that they, it's not a very good way to throw money away. But anyway, that's why we take money from the lottery to do that, because it's the place where you can easily get it. You can put that tax on and nobody objects. Mr. Anderson never objected, and I'm sure Mr. Harris in the future will never object to when someone says this is terrible, we should do something to stop it. So just a little capsule history.
Thanks for your sage comments, Representative Kahn, as always. And Representative Mallory has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With response to Representative De La Forest's statement about why do we do it only on this and not on alcohol, I don't think the state runs any huge bar operations, which we run this. I don't know that we have even a single bar in the state that we run. We certainly don't make money off it that I know of.
I was referring to municipal liquor stores.
Yeah. Representative Van Forst.
Oh.
And being creations of the state, I think we could certainly create a scheme, Representative Mallory, where we could put some sort of similar taxation scheme for alcohol treatment programs.
And Madam Chair, we probably do.
Yeah.
Because we collect a hefty tax on alcohol that goes into the general fund, and we fund in the Health and Human Services budget probably a line item or at least a cost somewhere along the line for alcohol treatments, other type of organizations. And you know, alcohol is a cost to the state as well, with court costs and sometimes there are court mandated treatments that we pay for. That's correct. But there's another little bit of history too. When, you know, gambling in the state of Minnesota probably wouldn't exist at all if it wasn't for the constitutional amendment that established the lottery. And so that was the driving force that allowed casinos in and everybody else in.
No.
And so that was kind of the first type of gambling that we had, and we recognized that that would probably also need to have some funding for some of those resources.
Representative Hilty, or excuse me, Mallory, you had a follow-up question?
Well, Madam Chair, he stated what I was going to say, but then in turn he raised another issue. Minnesotans do like to gamble. I saw studies before we had legal gambling here, and every year we were in the top five in the nation in gambling.
And Representative Hilty, did you have a question?
Yes, I did, Madam Chair. Thank you. Mr. Harris, with regard to unclaimed prizes, I presume you track what games result in the most unclaimed prizes. Do you have that information?
Mr. Harris?
Madam Chair, Representative Hilty, we do track unclaimed prizes down to the game level. I don't have, if you're curious about which game has more unclaimed prize money, I don't have that information right now. I can get that information if you would like.
I'd be interested. Thank you.
And Representative Kahn?
I think it's just a follow-up on what Representative Solberg said, but the reason it isn't that the lottery is very anxious to be running casinos or doing these expanded gambling operations. It's just that because of the wording of the constitutional amendment, any kind of gambling that's run by the state is only defined as a lottery and can only be done by the lottery. So it isn't that they're the ones to say, well, we want to run a state casino. It's just because of the constitutional limits, that's the only way it could be done in the state. I think that's kind of what Laura said. Yeah, horse racing.
Okay, do you have any other questions for Mr. Harris or Mr. Affini?
Oh, yeah.
Any questions? Did you have any final comments that you wanted to make?
No, I don't, ma'am.
Okay, well, hearing no further questions, I want to thank you both for coming, and this meeting is adjourned.